It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Veterans are who we are, what we talk about, who we fight for. This podcast sheds light on real issues facing our veterans. It informs the uninformed, it celebrates their triumphs, and provides hope to those fighting a silent battle. This is Upholding Valor. Welcome, I'm Jill Atwood, Director of Communications for the VA Salt Lake City Healthcare System and your host for Upholding Valor. Of course, because of Veterans Day this month, we are celebrating extraordinary men and women who have touched our lives, both with their service, but also with the care we have been able to provide. VA has the best care around, period. I know I'm biased, but I think I'm right. I know you hear the negative in the media. Yeah, we're an easy target, but those are isolated incidents most of the time, completely blown out of proportion. I see personally the good every day. I know the difference we make. And sadly, you don't hear about those stories, and that's why I am here, doing this podcast and sharing those stories. We are about to hear from a veteran who has a brand new set of lungs, and transplants are tricky business. Everything has to work perfectly, and in this case, it did. From the care in the community process, to VA's partnership with the U of U, to our extraordinary providers here at VA, of course. So joining me now is Joe Rand. He is a Marine Corps veteran, and he is thriving after his double lung transplant. And we also have his rock by his side, his wife, Henny, who's been there through this entire journey. Welcome you two.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much. Joe, don't be scared. All right. You got this. All right. I need to hear your story, because I think probably at one point you didn't think you'd be around to tell your story.
No, I did not.
So let's talk about this amazing, not just one lung, double
Both.
Lung
yes.
transplant. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, it was crazy. Like the one doctor said, I got the double whammy. So,
right.
You know, my breathing was obstructed and restricted. So, and a year ago, March, it hit me hard and fast. I went from, you know, being out of breath and this. And I thought I was a little out of shape. Everybody else thought I was
sure.
just lazy, you know.
Right.
I couldn't hardly do anything. But so I had an episode one night, and, you know, and of course I'm a guy. 3 days later, I go to the emergency room.
Right.
And,
I'm looking at your wife. We know.
Yeah.
We know.
So, and then I find out that, you know, my oxygen level is just very, very low. So at that time, they put me on 2 to 4 liters occasionally as needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what for? Like, what was the cause?
They didn't
what
really
was
know at that point.
Okay.
They didn't really. Oh, okay. Right. And this is a year ago, March, right? Mm-hmm. So this is right when the whole pandemic stuff.
Oh, terrible timing
right.
to boot.
So the first doctor I seen wouldn't come within 6 feet of me and prescribed me an inhaler.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-oh.
At this whole time, I'm in the process of getting my VA records, medical records, from Arizona up here to Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the middle of that process. And then come to find out, you know, I hadn't seen a VA doctor yet. You got to see them face-to-face to get that enacted. So I'm, like, stuck out on a limb. I was getting really scared.
So you were in the community.
Yes,
correct.
I live in rural central Utah.
Okay, gotcha.
So
you needed to get connected with us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
and I was in the process of doing that when I got really sick.
And then what happened? What happens next?
I go to the emergency room. I got me an appointment mm-hmm. with the doctor at the St. George Clinic because that's closer and it's
sure.
a nice drive.
St. George is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I end up going to the emergency room again. And then just so happens there was a doctor there with a pulmonary background. He recognized right away what was going on, right away.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, excuse me, I'll get emotional
here
and there.
It's okay, you can.
But,
you can, that's
yeah,
what this is for.
It's all still so fresh. It's all still so fresh.
Well, and you have lots of friends and fellow veterans listening
yeah,
right
yeah.
now. So, and they want to hear from you.
Yeah, and so I... and he kept me in the hospital for 3 nights, you know. And there was no way to transport me even up here to the VA because mm-hmm. there was no way to get me here because my oxygen need was so great. So I left the hospital at that time on 6 liters of oxygen.
Wow.
I don't know how much you know about oxygen levels, but that's starting to get up there a lot. And this is only, what, 4 months, three mm-hmm. or 4 months after I first noticed something.
Mm-hmm.
So luckily his background in pulmonology referred me to a pulmonologist in central Utah.
Provo.
No.
Yeah. Provo.
Utah Valley Hospital in Provo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did he tell you?
He's the one who gave me the news.
Yeah. And what was the news?
The news was the CT scan of my lungs, all this scar tissue, and that scar tissue, you don't exchange oxygen with your body. So he pulled me back to his office and showed me that, and it was like my heart was starting to sink already, right?
No.
We go back to the examination room, says, Joe, there's no cure and there's no treatment.
What was it from? How did you get the scar tissue?
I'll get to that.
Okay. And I want to get to how you were doing, too, with all this, honey.
So he says, there's no cure, no treatment. I go, okay, what, you know, my head's swimming. He goes, there's a possibility of a transplant, and you might be a good candidate. And he, by chance, knew Dr. Cahill at the transplant team at the University of Utah.
Perfect.
Everything's just starting to fall in line. I'm getting medical care. At that point, you know, I've seen the St. George doctor, my doctor, so I got some face-to-face with him. And everything's falling in line, you know. So we start the process of getting approved and all that. And just comes off in time. Back to your question. The IPF, idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, mm-hmm. is what really was kicking my butt. Idiopathic basically means no known cause.
Oh, wow.
No known cause.
Yeah. My mom had the same thing, and she had just passed, two years prior.
So you can't breathe. You have all the scar tissue in your lungs, and you have no idea why, and it's not going to get better.
Right.
So you go from being a normal guy who thinks everything's fine to needing a double lung transplant in a span of 3 or 4 months.
Right. Within 5 months, I'm on 10, five, 6 months, I'm on 10 liters of oxygen.
And how are you doing? What are you doing during all this time?
I was just in a state of shock. You know, I just lost my mom from this horrible disease and, you know, watching her struggle with the oxygen and everything. And then I thought, you know, well, we moved to Utah to be closer to the kids. You know, we got out of Arizona and everything was wonderful. Life was beautiful, you know. And then this happened and I thought, oh my gosh.
So,
you know, I just didn't know how to feel, what to feel. You know,
well, how could you? It's a day-to-day thing at this point.
Yeah.
So talk to me about coming up to Salt Lake and the transplant list and how all that works. Because I'll admit, and Salt Lake City is one of 5 heart transplant hubs across the country. So we do this, but I haven't heard much about the lung transplant. So I want to know your story in terms of the VA and how this worked.
Right. Well, I got approved to the VA. They got to send it back east and all that stuff. And there's 2 places that the VA does lung transplants.
Mm-hmm.
It's Seattle, I think, and Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I was so sick that would, and, you know, I don't have a lot of money. I'm retired on a fixed income.
Yeah, for sure.
So my income's pretty low. So it'd be a hardship, let alone, you know, medical and financially.
Mm-hmm.
So we got approved and coming up here. They do have the heart transplant coordinate
with
the VA.
Right.
But
the U does.
The university, yes. So I was the first lung transplant to have to go through this.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
Kind of blazing a little bit of territory there.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of it's familiar. But there's already been, and it's in place, and it has been for a while, the doctors, some of them work here, some of them work there as well.
Right.
Both places. And they communicate constantly.
Yeah, we train a lot of the
youth
physicians.
Right,
they
right,
do rotations
right,
here, so that's how it works. We've got some brilliant minds.
Right. They're absolutely. And I'll take this moment to say I haven't ran into anybody in either hospital that has not been just top-notch.
I love it.
Yeah. People, the community can say what they want, like you started the podcast with, about, you know, the the VA, that's top-notch.
They just really don't know. They just don't know.
It really is. From every step of the way, I'm just amazed. Amazed.
Okay, so take me through the next step. So what happens? They find you, the lungs? Who finds you,
I have to be within an hour.
Gotcha.
So I'm with my sister in Saratoga Springs, 50 minutes away.
Okay.
So it's cutting it close.
Yeah.
And I'm put on the transplant list. And usually that's about 1 to 3 months. You know, people have to be on, you know. Mm-hmm. It took me 5 months.
Okay.
Because I'm tall. So it's like the one doctor said, it's like the Goldilocks story, you know. Well, it's got to be just right.
Well, and does two complicate it versus one?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I wasn't sure.
No, because it's a size match.
Okay.
It's got to be, you know, I'm a tall guy, so it took a while.
And it literally something bad needs to happen to someone else.
Right, and that's always in your mind the
and
whole time.
You get the gift of life, yeah.
Yes, and it is a gift.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. But it's not an easy process to go through any of this, the testing, the qualifying, mm-hmm. the waiting. It's like I said in one other story, you have to want to live. You have to want to survive, to stay alive. You have to want it.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy. A lot of people just choose to stay home and give up and, you know, drink a lot of people or whatever they choose to do just to deteriorate. And I wasn't going to do that.
You did the work.
Yeah, I wasn't going to do that.
And you helped him do the work.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Tell me about that. What do you mean it was a lot of work? Probably a lot of emotional work.
A whole lot of emotions involved, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know if he was going to live or not. And every day, you know, you're watching him go downhill. And mm-hmm. it was devastating.
Yeah.
And staying at his sister's for 6 months, you know, thank God we had her to take us in.
But that's not easy.
No. Leaving the home wasn't easy, you know. And, yeah, it was rough. And, we went from living in our house, you know, into a little bedroom.
Right.
So, but, yeah, we got a couple of calls, and they were dry runs.
Okay.
Dry runs.
Five. Like you thought, but then no. Ooh, and
That was emotional.
Yeah. Five of them? Oh, wow. Okay, well, tell me about the call.
The call. Oh.
Tell me.
Well, we got up here and we thought, okay, now is this going to be another dry run?
Right.
And this was, I knew if this wasn't it, he would not survive. He would not have survived. The oxygen went up to 15 liters that day. And, you know, I just prayed, you know, that these lungs would come in and they'd be perfect for him. Because he would not have made it.
Yeah, you were on a timeline, and it was running out.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, of course, you're thinking about this poor family that's giving up the lungs. You know, this poor young man has passed away. And
so you learned a little about who you got the lungs from.
Very little.
And we're still trying to get in the process of, you know, writing letters.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
It's just still too new. You know, it's hard. But, we were lucky to have him.
And what did you tell me about your thoughts when the call came in and then you realized it was a match and you were going to proceed?
Well, we didn't. You don't really know until I'm out. I've been.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so I don't really know. And I've gotten right close to that point before and the lungs turned out to be no good. So I'm going, oh, God, you know, and my oxygen level increased to 15 liters as we're waiting, and that wasn't enough. My body still needed more oxygen. So I knew if this wasn't going to be it, you know, just take me home now. but it did came in, and it was a perfect match. Perfect.
That's incredible. So they get you up to the point where, like, prepping you for surgery, and they're still not knowing if it's going to work.
Right. And the only way that I knew...
And you're gasping for air.
Yes.
And you're...
I went down into the waiting room, and they said, well, just watch the board, because I said, well, how will I know?
Right.
You know, and they said, watch the board, and the color strip will change to a different color, which means he will go into surgery.
Okay.
So I was sitting there and waiting and waiting, and then all of a sudden the color changed, so he's in surgery.
That's a good sign.
So then, So then they give me an update every couple of hours, and it was like 2 hours later, and they said the left lung is in.
In just 2 hours. How long was the surgery total?
It was
somewhere between 10 and 12 or 10.
Moly.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was about 9 or 10, yeah.
And you're there the whole time?
Yeah.
And they're giving you updates and things are going well?
Yeah, they gave me updates every, like, 2 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was nerve-wracking. And then when the doctor finally did come in and tell me, you know, that it was over, he did not have the jovial look on his face. You know, he just said he's a very sick man. So I thought, oh, my
gosh. He wanted to temper your expectations.
Yeah. And luckily my daughter was there with me.
Right.
So, but yeah, the doctor said we ended up not closing because if we need to get back in, if anything happens, you know, we can just go right back in and fix it. But yeah.
Oh, what is that? So he's still
there
open?
There was a sponge.
Oh,
yeah,
my
they
goodness.
Had a sponge in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because even if a surgery is successful with a transplant, you never know if the body's going to accept or reject
it. Right.
And so, do we know what kind of time frame we're looking at when you know whether it's going to go well or not?
It's usually in the first 3 to 6 months. You kind of know right away. And it's not really, if it happens, it's going to be how bad, to what extent.
Sure. So something's going to happen.
Something's
Your body's going to have a reaction.
Right. And so far for me,
nothing.
Smooth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Smooth. I mean, exceptionally well. From the pulmonary rehab, everything. I mean, I got cut out of that early because I was doing so well.
Right. They were the perfect match.
Yeah, that one doctor afterwards, because, I wake up and I'm just smiling. Hey, everybody,
really?
What's going on?
Yeah, I did not
and the
expect
the doctors
that.
Are coming out with their mouths hanging open going,
how are you doing so well?
Right? That's crazy, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So you woke up and felt better immediately.
Immediately.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can breathe.
A couple days, you know, later I'm on room air.
Wow.
And have been ever since.
So how long were you in the hospital? How long was that recovery rehab process?
I was in the hospital for 12 days.
Okay. And you're in the Fisher House?
Yes.
Or wherever. You're
yes.
close by.
I was in the Fisher House the whole time, yes.
ICU for, 3-4 days? And then, total of 12. And then, God, they really let me leave? I mean, you know.
So now this is a collaboration between you and the VA, right?
Right.
So where was the actual surgery done?
At the university.
At the university.
Right.
And then we handled your care afterwards, correct?
It is a partnership. It's
right.
like some of them, Dr. Mir Kasboff, everything goes through him for the VA.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So, and all my pharmacy stuff, which, you know, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
So, handfuls of pills, but the doctor of the clinics is still with the transplant team at the university.
I'm so thrilled
for you. The collaboration works tremendously well.
Oh my goodness. So how long has it been now since the surgery?
In 2 weeks, it'll be six months.
Okay, and that's kind of the threshold that we're talking
about.
But
so far, I mean, exceptionally well.
How have things changed? Are you back home?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been home for two or three months now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just interacting with my family, grandkids.
Yeah. Quality of life way up.
I'll do my outdoor stuff I was doing before, you know, to certain extents. But I'll be hiking even more, you know.
I think it's safe to say you were near death.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
So how have things changed for you since that experience? You know, your outlook on life, your relationship with your wife. It's had to have just changed you profoundly.
Yeah.
Before, you know, people say, I pray for this and that. Well, I actually do pray, you know, and I thank God every morning I wake up.
Right.
I'm very, very appreciative. just to breathe. I mean, people take it for granted. But I'll tell you, there's nothing worse than slowly suffocating to death.
I think that would be the worst. I was actually thinking about you, and when you're telling your story, and not being able to breathe has to be about the worst.
Right.
So or trying to get that deep breath that you can never
and
get.
Now I could take a deep breath, another deep breath, and then I can go even deeper. I don't know if I've ever been able to do that.
Today, well, you have some young lungs, maybe.
Yes.
20 younger? To 30 year old.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to have a hard time keeping up.
Already does.
Well, now, you know, I people laugh at me because I'm running behind him, you know, and I have a smile on my face.
I love it.
And people are just looking at me like, you know, she's like 10 paces running behind this guy, you
I'm
know.
Just stepping.
And they just look at me like, you know, just a weird look on their face.
Yeah.
And they have no clue what I feel on the inside because before I was behind him
pushing
a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and basically being his, you know, his pusher.
I couldn't do anything. I couldn't
do anything.
Nothing. I was out of breath just trying to eat.
Oh, yeah.
I'd roll over in bed and be out of breath.
Yeah.
Now, are you exercising a little bit
now? Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Is that why she says she's running behind you?
I can walk for 2 or 3 miles easy. Yeah, that's my normal pace. You know, it's a good...
It's
I'm
true,
tall,
you're
so
tall. Yeah.
I'm tall,
right.
So yeah, I'm just
He's
stepping
tall,
it out.
He's tall, I'm short, you know, so it's like I speed walk all the time now. But yeah, it's quite a big deal.
Yeah, well, it's a perfect Veterans Day story.
Right.
Well, I mean, every day is Veterans Day for us here at the VA, but this time of year especially, we like to hear just stories about extraordinary people and their journeys. And I love the part that you said, because I've always said it no matter what here at the VA, because our veterans have been through a lot. And when they come to us, they have to be willing to do the work, whether it's physical or mental health recovery.
Yes.
So I'm so happy for the both of you.
Yes,
and
thank you.
The Fisher House has just been amazing.
Couldn't have done it without them either.
Yeah.
Could not
because,
have.
You know, there's no way I could afford to stay this close to the hospital without the Fisher House.
Well, and that's what the Fisher House is for.
Yes, they've been wonderful.
Well, I appreciate the both of you. Any closing thoughts?
Not of course, it come right off put on the spot. And no, but I'm just doing so well, and it is putting in the work. It's staying active, even if I exercise or not. You know, it's just staying active, and most of my journey now has to do with just managing medications.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And I love that you gave a shout out to everybody who was involved in getting you better, from the community care folks to the VA folks to the U of U. They do extraordinary work.
We have people, the nurses, the ICU nurses, the pharmacists. I mean, it goes on and on, but it's a huge collaboration.
I bet they were tickled.
And I benefited from it greatly.
I bet they were tickled to see you wake up and walk out of there eventually.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Well, I thank you both for sharing your story. I know it probably is emotional.
It is.
And hard
it's
to share,
emotional.
But...
Yes.
But it's now, new lease on life.
Yes.
Well, thanks for joining us today for Upholding Valor. Stay safe, take care of each other, and be kind. I want you guys to check in with me, okay? Let me know how things are going down the road. This is Jill Atwood. I'm a VA employee, Army veteran, and veteran of Desert Storm, and this is personal to me. There is no greater mission than to serve and fight for those who fought for us. Thanks for listening, and thanks for caring. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe or rate us, or better yet, tell a vet and tell a friend to tune in by texting veterans to 57500 or go to ksl360.com/veterans. VA is honored to serve you. Talk to you next time.